A legal education means you will learn to speak in a new language. You will be taught to achieve insight into the world around you and to sharply question what you know.
You can't handle the truth!
You're out of order! You're out of order! The whole trial is out of order!
What are you doing, detective? What are you doing talking to my client without me present? You sneaky Pete!
Lose! I don't lose! I win! I win! I'm a lawyer! That's my job! That's what I do!
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the Comedians at Law podcast. This week we have Matt Ritter and Kevin Israel running the ship.
What's going on, Matt? How you doing?
I am doing good, man. We have some exciting things on the horizon, do we not?
Yeah, we have a couple big shows coming up. On Saturday, June 8th at 9:30, we're going to be at the Comedy Shop at Brick 46 in New Jersey. It's a nice little club. So one of my friends runs it. It's going to be a really great show. They're excited about having us. You can go to jjcomedy.com for tickets and information, or as always, go to comediansatlaw.com. Again, that's on June 8th at 9:30 at Brick 46 in New Jersey.
You know what and I love then, about you know what I love about New Jersey comedy crowds and like couples.
What's that?
And everything. They're the best.
We are a fun bunch.
They're the best. A Saturday night crowd in Jersey, that's you're not going to get any better than that.
No, it's gonna kill. We love to laugh, and it's definitely gonna be a good time. And
it's
then
like, you know, it's like that's where the guy you know who's not very romantic takes his wife, so she gets a little tickled. She gets a little tickled, yeah. So she'll do sexual
whatever
stuff.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah.
And then on Friday, June 21st, we're going across the river into New York. We're gonna be at Gotham Comedy Club. We're very excited to be teaming up with Gotham Comedy Foundation. A charity that helps promote healing through laughter. It's a great charity. It's going to be our first show teamed up with this charity. It's going to be Friday, June 21st, 7:30 p.m. at Gotham Comedy Club. Go to comediansatlaw.com or gothamcomedyclub.com for ticket information. It's going to be another great show. Gotham's been great to us. We're happy to be going back there and really looking forward to working with the Gotham Comedy Foundation.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, I think, for those of you who don't know, Gotham Comedy Club is the premier club in New York. So, for us, for them to keep having us back is says something about us.
It's a testament to our comedic chops.
Yeah. Did you have a good Mother's Day? Did you do anything fun for Mother's Day?
Yeah, I went and saw my mom, saw some of my family, got some of the Jewish guilt.
Yeah.
Went in happy, left feeling bad about myself, and here I am.
We got my mom a tablet for Mother's Day, and she, in classic fashion, she lost it already.
Shut up.
She lost it. We think she lost it at Ben's Deli, the Ben's Deli chain.
Yeah.
We think she lost it at Ben's Deli.
So how long did she have to actually possess it?
I think maybe 2.5 to 3 hours.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
that story is almost worth losing the tablet.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty classic. It's pretty. She's not very good. That's why we're like, are we really gonna get her a tablet? What is the point?
is she tech savvy? Did she know what to do with it?
She's getting there, but she loses things. So it's I'm waiting for them to have the chip, so she can't lose the chip in her head.
Well, I think it's definitely coming. Start saving up.
She won't. Yeah, she's the type of person. She this will be big for her. The chip will be huge. She won't be able to be like, oh man, I lost that chip. I just had it. Where was it?
Don't get her the Google glasses.
No, she'll lose those.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
So, but other than that, yeah, terrific Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there.
Yes, happy Mother's Day to all the mothers who are listening. Hope you had a great special day.
What is the, this is just a rhetorical question, or maybe you have the answer. What is the extent of the wishing of Mother's Day to mothers that are, in your family? Like, I wished the Mother's Day directly to my mother and my grandmother, and then my sister-in-law. I didn't wish one to my aunt. Should I have? Am I remiss in doing that?
I don't know. It's such a contrived holiday just made by, you know, greeting card companies. Not saying that mothers don't deserve a day, but, you know, I wish my mom, my sister, my sister's mother-in-law was actually there, so I, you know, say, but I mean, as far as going out of my way, I texted a couple of my friends who are mothers and said Happy Mother's Day, but, you know, we're all just getting sold a lot of goods that nobody asked for.
Yeah, but you know, it's like people hold grudges. Like, I'm pretty sure my aunt is, you know, gonna have something to say to my mom about how I didn't, you know, send her a Happy Mother's Day greeting.
Well, that's it. I mean, I think that's your own personal familial responsibility.
They're grudge keepers. They're all grudge keepers.
Yeah. Well, then if you know that's coming, you should prepare for that and forestall it.
I think I like to cause these little petty. I think I like to see how petty of a grudge I can cause.
You're a troublemaker.
Yeah, I've always been a troublemaker. Definitely.
I can appreciate that.
Definitely always have been. So I'm pretty sure, you know, there'll be a reckoning from that.
Well, I say the safest way is just wish everybody that you can a Happy Mother's Day and
I'm
avoid.
I'm just gonna be like, didn't you get my Facebook status update? That was to you.
that was directly to you. Yes,
yeah, like that it. Was so we've had it was a good Mother's Day to the people that I did wish it for. You know, everybody else can go to hell.
Yeah, well, screw them.
Should we jump into some of these stories?
Yeah, let's talk about what's hot and going on.
Since when has the paragon of investigative journalism allowed lawyers to determine the news content?
This was a very interesting week because one of the oldies but goodies popped up back into the legal landscape. I'm talking about none other than O.J. Simpson.
He's like herpes. You just can't get rid of him.
He's the legal system herpes, right?
I'm pretty sure that's how the judges feel about him.
Yeah, yeah. It's very icky when a judge reads O.J. Simpson on their docket.
Yeah.
So yeah, apparently,
this is amazing. Yeah. What's going on with him? What's he thinking?
It's too funny. I mean, it's actually interesting from a legal standpoint. O.J. Simpson is trying to get a Vegas court hearing on a bid for a new trial. For those of you who aren't familiar, he's committed crimes since he killed his wife. I mean, allegedly.
Yes, this isn't about the fact that he's a murderer.
No, this is aside from the murder, he committed another heinous crime, actually.
An even dumber crime.
What he did was he armed robbery. He stole nearly $700,000 worth of his own collectible memorabilia that he had sold, I believe.
Yes, yes.
So he sold it and then he stole it and held these people hostage in a hotel room at gunpoint and stole back his, I guess it was a bunch of his, you know, memorabilia and, you know, knickknacks and cards and jerseys and whatnot, photos and heirlooms.
And this is back in 2008.
Yeah, so it was back in 2008 and he, you know, he was found guilty of armed robbery, I believe, and kidnapping, and he failed on appeal in 2010. So he's in jail. But now he's basically saying that his lawyer botched his case. He's come up with an interesting defense. And basically the defense is that he told his lawyer in advance that he planned on confronting these collectibles dealers.
Right.
So he's arguing that he disclosed his plan to his lawyer and that his lawyer advised him, and I quote, that I was within my legal rights.
Which, if that is accurate, he's the worst attorney ever.
But you think OJ was like, so what I'm going to do is...
Yeah. It's definitely like when you were a kid and you know, you told your parents one thing and then you went out and did another. And when you get caught for it, you said, but you told me I could.
I'm fairly certain you've hit the nail on the head here. I'm pretty sure he didn't tell his attorney. So what I'm going to do is... I'm going to tie one of them up at gunpoint and the other one I'm going to put a ball gag in his mouth so he can't talk. And then I'm going to steal back all my baseball cards.
Oh, sure, Juice. That sounds like a good idea. You're perfectly within your legal rights. Go for it.
Oh, man.
Yeah, well, that's – I think if I was reading the article correctly, he's going on to complain that he didn't realize that there could have been a plea deal that would have gotten him less time because he didn't understand that he could actually get convicted.
Right. Yeah, he actually said, had I understood there was an actual chance of conviction, I would have accepted such an offer.
Because you know what? I killed a lady and I didn't get convicted there.
I didn't know that you could get convicted of crimes in the U.S.
I thought we all just go to court and the judge says, nah, it's all right, go home.
I thought you put on a tight pair of gloves, you wave them around, and then you go home.
Yeah. You know what, though? I mean, you really have to honestly look at it from his standpoint. What's he got to lose?
Nothing. I mean, he doesn't have any pride at this point.
And his sentence, which I think is interesting, he's sentenced to 9 to 33 years.
You know,
that's the broadest sentence I think I've ever heard of.
you think that they're just like, let's see how long he lives? Is that what they were thinking?
Yeah, well, he won't be eligible for parole in his current sentence till he's 70.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, maybe there's a lottery amongst the bailiffs or the prison guards to see where in the 9 to 33 he's going to go.
You think that's why they give a big range so they can play the rackets, they can play the numbers? Yeah.
Absolutely.
What I think is interesting is that in this article they say this is a very common practice. You know, like you said,
because what else do you have to lose? You have nothing to lose.
Yeah, I mean, look, first you try the one-armed man defense. That's what I always would try.
Does that work?
Yeah, no, I don't think that one works. But if that doesn't work, then you go with my attorney didn't make me aware that I could have been found guilty at all ever.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, listen, OJ's a mess. It's really going to be interesting to see. I mean, I would assume, and I don't know, I'll tap into your legal expertise, but I would assume that he's probably not going to be granted this new trial.
Yeah, I think it's unlikely. I think it's really unlikely.
Now, if I was NBC or CBS, I would beg a judge to grant him a new trial and turn it into the newest, hottest reality show.
Yeah, that would be awesome. The O.J. Simpson retrial.
Yeah. Maybe get, you know,
it's
the
very
situation.
Odd. You know, his co-defendant is serving a 7.5 to 27-year sentence. He had a different betting line. What is that? That is odd. You're right.
He got these crazy sentences.
Well, but I guess that's not that different from like 15 to life, right? It's.
Yeah, that's true. But at least that just seems like, wow. But this is just a really specific time frame that's very broad.
Yeah, but you know what's interesting, actually? This is interesting. So Simpson's co-defendant at that trial, C.J. Stewart, served 2 years of his 7.5 to 27 before the Supreme Court overturned his conviction. They ruled that Simpson's fame tainted the proceedings and he should have been tried separately. That's interesting. So he took a plea deal and he got off after 2 years. This is what he said. As far as Simpson is concerned, I wish him luck.
he said from a resort somewhere, sipping a...
He's now 59 and driving a limousine in New Orleans. How awesome would it... I want to request that guy as my limousine driver.
He's got to have an amazing story to tell. He should... Yeah. Why isn't he writing a book?
He probably is. I was in New Orleans, actually, recently. I wonder if I accidentally took a ride with this guy.
You definitely did.
Yeah.
You were definitely in his... Well, all right, let's move on to the next story.
Yeah, we wish OJ luck. So,
good luck. Good luck, Juice. I hope the litigation gods are with you once again.
So this next story, Jodi Arias' verdict came out. And to no surprise to me, I don't know if it was a surprise to you, she was found guilty of first-degree murder.
Well, she admitted it.
Yeah, it wasn't a matter of whether she was going to be found, you know, innocent or guilty. I mean, well, she claimed self-defense, which was absurd.
Which, yeah, I mean, maybe you stabbed the guy 5 times, but she stabbed him 27 times.
And shot him in the head.
And slit his throat.
Yeah. And lied about it. Twice.
Yes.
And said that it was 2 random people who came in and attacked him.
She's a cute girl, though. She doesn't look like a murderer.
Honestly, she's very hot.
I said I don't know if I would go very hot. This picture, I've seen some footage of her.
You know, something about the murdering and the throat slitting turns me on.
I did. I think I saw an interview with her where she said she just wants this all over already.
Yeah, she actually said she'd rather die than life in prison.
Yeah, which I don't think I disagree with.
You know. I would also feel that way. I wouldn't want to be in jail for life. That's horrible. Just give me the chair. But yeah. I'll tell you this. I watched like an hour long special on it. She was guiltier than OJ. I mean, her, the fact that she was even trying to mount a defense was absurd. I don't know if you know some of the facts. Like, one of the interesting things, she borrowed a friend's, she rented a car to drive across state lines to kill him. And she borrowed tanks of gas from a friend so she wouldn't have to stop anywhere and get gas and use her credit card.
Wow.
And then she put the cat, they were taking naked pictures the night she killed him. She put her camera in the washing machine thinking she destroyed it. The memory card survived.
The only time a memory card ever survived in a watching.
Yeah, and it had the date on the bottom. She's like, I wasn't in Arizona on November 7th, 2012. And then they look at the memory card. It says November 12th.
This is like a textbook lesson of how not to cover up a premeditation.
Yeah, but so now that they're now that they found her guilty, I think it's so weird how they have all these phases.
Yeah. Yeah, because now she moves into the aggravation phase.
Right. So, like, to me, that doesn't even make any sense, right? So the question becomes, these same 12 jurors who found her guilty of premeditated murder are now deciding the degree to which Arias intended the Travis Alexander suffer physical pain or mental anguish.
Well, she could face the death penalty, right?
Yes.
Well, you see, I think this all just comes in our society's desperate way to make it look that a death penalty sentence is as ironclad as possible, that we're not sending anybody unjustly to their demise.
Well, that's a separate question, isn't it? I mean, because that's not really what the jury is supposed to be doing, right? They're just supposed to be answering this question.
Right. No, I agree.
Death penalty itself. Look, I don't know how I feel. I'm probably against the death penalty because of all the evidence. You know, we had Gil Garcetti on the you know, podcast a few months back talking about how misused it's been.
I don't know. I'm torn about it too. I realize that there's a lot of mistakes, but I think there's just so many people out there who, you know, there's no punishment that seems other than death. I don't, in a situation like this, I don't know, but you know, there's people out there, the guys, you know, that kid who walked up to a woman and shot her baby in the face.
Yeah. No, I mean, couldn't we just put them to work just building railroads and stuff like forever and not sleeping, just the doing that forever for the rest of their lives.
And just work them to their death.
Yeah. I feel like that's the worst.
I'm not thing against ever. I mean, put them to work. That's
you know
fine.
What I mean? Isn't that the worst thing ever?
Yeah.
Like to never get to rest. Like I feel like in prison you sleep all day.
It actually sounds like working at a law firm.
Yeah. I mean, make them do doc review forever. That's a fate worse than anything else. But I mean, just slave labor seems to me as bad as it gets.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So but back to this question. You know, why are – like how is there any feasible argument to be made? These same jurors who decided that she's guilty of first-degree murder, how can you then say, you know, that she didn't intend for him to suffer physical pain or mental anguish? I don't get it.
I don't know. You've stabbed somebody 27 times, shoot them in the head and slit their throat. It sounds like suffering was on the menu.
Right, especially since you planned to kill them and you chose that fashion, right? I mean, because if you planned to kill somebody and you just poisoned them, I don't know. Maybe it would be hard to say that they suffered, right?
I mean, you know, with the same 12 jurors will decide the degree to which Arias intended that Travis Alexander suffer physical pain or mental anguish. What's the degree? The degree was high.
Yeah,
it was
pretty, a lot of pain.
Yeah, tons. Is tons one of their possible answers?
The thing is, here's the worst part, right? So, like, I was just thinking about getting your throat slit, which is horrifying. It doesn't seem like she did a great job at it.
Because it's one of those, you know, see, you always just think in your head, wow, somebody got stabbed, they must die. You know, you stabbed once, you're probably going to die. But really, you can stab a person in a lot of places in their body and they're not going to die. It's just going to suck real bad. So she might, I don't know the knife she was using or what instrument
she
was using.
He crawled into the bathtub or she dragged him across the room. So it's just, oof.
Yeah, this sounds like one of the, you know, the more gruesome, horrible.
Yeah. Why am I turned on by this woman?
Because you're twisted.
Yeah, it's very, but a lot of people are, I think.
Yeah, well, listen, there's a lot of strange people out there.
She has, like, a fan club, you know? She's going to be one of those women that gets a lot of love letters in prison.
It's that like that TV show that's on right now, The
Right, the
Following.
Following or the Cult. There's like multiple
Yeah,
ones.
where he's got his whole own little army out there. She's gonna start her own little army of
It's pretty
freaks.
scary, you know, because if they don't cut off the communication, she really could.
Yeah. Well, and look, and that's really a testament to how twisted our society is that people would want to.
I mean, I get it because I'm sickly, you know, like turned on by her
Are you gonna be
after.
the first letter she gets?
No, I'm not gonna write her letters. My girlfriend won't let me write letters to convicted murderers. That's on our list of no-nos.
That should be up in number one or two.
Yeah, no, it's on there. We have a long list, but that's definitely high up there.
Followed right by not sleeping on top of the comforter.
Yeah, I wanted to. The reason I said the thing about making them slave labor because I thought that was a nice segue into our
Ooh.
final story.
Hey, I like it. I like it. I like and this one really shocks me. Just the numbers in this shock me.
Yeah, go ahead, take the lead on this.
It seems that Bangladesh has nearly a slave labor class, and officials are looking to raise the minimum wage for garment workers after a factory collapsed and killed 1,000 people. It seems that currently the minimum wage is $38 a month.
Is that in Bangladeshi rupees or is that in dollars?
I would assume they're converting to dollars
Yeah.
because they say that the current per capita income in the country is $1,940 a year, which is just a little more than I made in comedy last year.
Yeah, that's not a lot of money. It's not a
No,
lot of.
it's not, I can't fathom these numbers.
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, you know, I wonder if, you know, just relative to the rest of their workforce, if that's way below or if their entire economy is just terrible.
I would assume. I mean, I don't know a lot about Bangladesh. I'm sure there's an elite ruling class who probably has most of the money, and it's 0.01% of the population, and everybody just lives in manure
Yeah.
huts.
1,000 people dying in one factory is a lot.
Yes. I mean, that's pretty much. I would assume that was probably everybody in the factory.
Yeah, it's probably there's a couple people who survived, I think, but it's not good. You know, I've always heard people, you know, I've heard a lot of people say if you're going to work in a factory, don't do it in Bangladesh.
Is that's a saying? That's not
No,
so nice to.
it's now a saying.
Yeah. Let me tell you two things. Buy
Yeah.
when the market's down, and if you're gonna work in a sweatshop, don't do it in
That's
Bangladesh.
right. You could see that being in a movie, like a basketball coach giving you advice.
Yes. My father, before he died, gave me one valuable piece of advice.
Never work in a Bangladeshi
I mean,
sweatshop.
$38 a month, that's like $1.03 a day.
It's disgraceful, and I think it brings up a very large issue. And the CEO of American Apparel actually spoke out against this. And I thought it was interesting that then he sort of got some backlash. He
Was
only
he
uses
wearing an uncomfortably deep V-neck t-shirt while he gave this
his V,
statement?
you could see his belly button from the top. But you know, they only use American workers and they pay them a living wage. They pay $12 an hour. I
Which
mean,
is like what, $4, $5 above minimum wage here?
yeah, look, I mean, you can. People on the Huffington Post were criticizing him, saying that you know, he's tried to fight the unions and he's had a bunch of lawsuits, et cetera, et cetera. But you know, his rivals are all using these Bangladeshi workers.
Right. Well, and I mean the real sad truth is, and it's sad from a variety of angles, is that we don't realize how much we pay for random goods that are made in conditions like this, and how much more expensive stuff will be if people are being paid what they actually should be paid. And I'm
Right.
not saying that we shouldn't. Well, I mean, maybe we should pay more. Maybe we don't all need to have 30 pairs of sneakers. Maybe a pair of sneakers should cost $200 so everybody is actually getting paid what they should who makes those sneakers.
Well, I guess that's the problem, right? Because, first of all, I think everybody agrees that nobody should work for $38 a month, no matter where you are in the world.
Unless it was, 1712.
Right, yeah, that would be pretty good money, I think, back then. But like you're saying, you know, look, if we're not getting them for cheap, then, you know, where the margin's going to come from. They're going to cost, you know, they're going to cost more. But so maybe they should cost more, you know, maybe they should cost more. I mean,
but you know, but then there, I mean, I think, you know, the counter argument to that is there will always be some group of people willing to work for nearly nothing.
I guess.
And there will always be a company or a corporation or an industry without enough morals to say no.
Right, but that's sort of right, like a defeatist attitude in a little bit of a sense, right? Because everybody always says, well, we can't do anything about it, so there's always going to be somebody to take advantage of. I actually think some point in the near future, there's probably going to be the ability to do a lot of this stuff without human beings, actually. And we're getting into a bigger issue, which is that there aren't going to be any jobs for these people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you know what? Actually, going back to what we were just saying, what the cost would be, according to the Workers' Rights Consortium, making factories safe in Bangladesh would cost about $3 billion, which sounds like a lot, but apparently it translates to consumers paying just 25 cents extra in goods made in the country.
I would pay an extra quarter to not have a Bangladeshi factory roof collapse and kill 1,000 people.
Yes. Next time I go to buy my ridiculously deep cut V-neck T-shirt, if it's 25 cents more, I'm not going to bulk.
Yeah. No. I'm next time I buy a really tight black the black, you know, pants, jeggings.
I could see you in jeggings.
Yeah.
I think you could pull them off.
Yeah.
With those weird pointy dress shoes that the Euro trash wear.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's an outrage, and I hope that, you know, there's a backlash. I do. I hope there's a backlash against the companies that are exploiting these people.
Well, it sounds like people are talking about it now. Hopefully this is going to lead to something, because that's completely unacceptable. And
do you think $12 is a fair wage, though, like for an American factory worker?
You know, it's such a – I mean, you know, here in Jersey, there's a big debate about raising the minimum wage. Right now, the minimum wage, I think, is $7 or $8, and they're talking about raising it to $10. And, you know, where does 10 put you? And I mean, it's one of those questions where at what point do you just say that's got to be the cutoff? You know, what's the, you know, cost of living? And – or, you know, honestly, I couldn't probably – $12 an hour – I don't know if that would still be enough.
Well,
to keep,
you know, and I think that's fine for a teenager, isn't it?
Right. And that's the point a lot of times, that, you know, that the minimum wage isn't necessarily targeted at a mother with three kids. It's targeted at, you know, a kid out of high school, or, you know, a kid working over the summer. So, yeah, $12 an hour would be pretty good for a, you know, a 15-year-old busboy.
Yeah, it would be, right? I mean, I think for a grown-up, right, like a grown-up person, especially one with a family, $20 is probably the lowest you could.
Yeah, I would think $20 an hour. You know, I don't know what the number is.
Some of these document reviews are paying kids $20 out of law school.
That's crazy.
Yeah, $20 an hour out of law school.
They should
probably just go to Bangladesh. They'd probably have a better quality of life at $38
yes.
a month.
And at least if things go really bad, they could just die in a factory collapse.
You know what? You could. There's worse place. It's worse to die in a doc review room.
it's just
with people you hate.
Because you know what? There's never going to be an article about it. There's not going to ever be two comedians on a blah on a podcast talking about the doc reviewers who perished.
No, sadly, they're just going to go unnoticed.
So why don't we wrap up with a little shout out to our new Twitter followers. As we do, and
yeah, we do it. This is our good cop, bad cop segment, huh?
Look, I'm really sorry about that. I just, I saw how aggressive you were being, and I thought, wow, I gotta go even bigger than that since we're doing bad cop, bad cop.
What? No, I said good cop, bad cop. I'm the bad cop, you're the good cop.
Okay, then there it is. That's it. I thought you said bad cop, bad cop.
Yeah, yeah. When I'm with Alex, I typically take the bad cop.
Okay, I'll be the good cop.
Because I've been very, very disgusted with our fans and followers as of late. I appreciate that we do have fans and followers. I do not appreciate that for some reason they just don't want to interact with us.
Oh, I've been feeling a little uptick on that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've gotten another, looks like 7-8 followers in the past however long this attracts for. We have Katrina Quillen. We have Annie Little, Farrah Gray, Aaron Hall, Tony Biancotti, and Mark Santi. New followers. Obviously, they're following us for a reason. They think we're funny. They enjoy our stuff. So once again, to you folks who I just named, if you tweeted us with the hashtag CalPod, whoever tweets to us first gets a free Comedians at Law t-shirt sent to you at no cost, and you will have it to wear and brag about.
Yeah, the t-shirts are nice, man.
We've been doing this for 6 weeks now, and we haven't seen much. I think two people have tweeted us in the past 6 or 7 weeks, so it's, you know, I don't have a lot of faith. I just don't have a lot of faith in the man. Sorry.
Somebody named Andy Siegel tweeted us, but I think it was just to read his book. I'm sure you're not too happy that is that spam?
Andy, honestly, we don't even have a book. We're not reading your book. We don't have time to read other people's books. I'm sure it's great. If you want, I'll go on Amazon and write a fake review. It will probably be scathing.
Hey, maybe you like it. It's a legal thriller, you know? I mean,
I doubt it.
Probably not.
I highly doubt it. Unless there are big machine guns in it or swords and wizards, I probably won't like it. But anyway, Andy, go peddle your wares to someone else. I doubt you're listening to our podcast anyhow.
Maybe he is. I'm going to say, Andy, thanks for engaging with us.
Well, and you know what, Andy? Prove me wrong. Tweet at us and say, screw you, Kevin Israel. I heard what you said. I'm going to show up at your apartment and beat the crap out of you.
You think Andy Siegel's a big guy?
I don't care. He couldn't beat the crap out of me. That's just ridiculous.
All right. Well, I guess that wraps it up for this week.
Hey, listen, another one down the drain on Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day. Make sure to come check us out at Gotham Comedy Club on June 21st. We'll be at Brick 46 in New Jersey.
I have to say now I'm actually, when we get off here, I'm interviewing Stephanie Cohen. She has a really cool law website. She does these video series where she interviews people sort of like us, like, you know, interesting and funny take on the law.
Nice. Just try not to hit on her, all right?
She's married and I have a girlfriend, and so that's not on the table.
Good. Good. I'm just listening. I'm just covering for our HR department.
Yeah. Oh yeah. For the HR. Yeah. Now I don't want to get a slap on the wrist from Comedians at Law HR department. So I'm going to be interviewing Stephanie Cohen. So, you know, keep listening for that. It's really cool. And come to our shows.
Awesome. Well, Matt, have a good night. Happy Mother's Day to everybody. And we'll see you next week.
All right. See ya.
Take care.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back on the Comedians at Law podcast. We have a very special guest. She is the host of a show called The Not So Legal Show. She's a lawyer. She's in entertainment. And I actually met her at a party in LA, and we, you know, sort of on the same track. So I thought we'd bring her in and talk about what she's doing. Welcome to the podcast, Stephanie Cohen.
Thank you, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So tell us about you went to law school and you went to Southwestern here in LA. How did you get into, deciding that you wanted to do a show about entertainment related to the law?
I mean, for me, I think the law is really about helping people and keeping them out of trouble. So, you know, I look at the show that I do as a way to reach a lot of people, answer questions, talk about trending topics, and use it as a way to reach more than just the people in my general circle that, you know, live in LA.
Yeah, I find it interesting. I mean, I feel like, you know, you have sort of a similar sort of theme that we do on Comedians at Law, except I feel like we don't try and help anybody. Yeah. We're not here to help people.
Right.
But Stephanie is. She's got a lot of informational. I mean, it's informational, but it's entertaining.
Yeah.
I mean, when people ask you about it, do you say, well, it's an entertainment, you know, site, or do you say it's a legal?
Yeah, I actually think the law is pretty boring. And so in my mind, it's about making the law entertaining and having people know that if they're dealing with an issue or a situation that they don't need to be scared to call an attorney, they absolutely should call someone if they're dealing with an issue. And just kind of bringing topics to light that people don't really think about. You know, I just interviewed a partner of a law firm who focuses on Ponzi schemes. And when I went to the dentist, the woman who was cleaning my teeth started asking me about the videos and then proceeds to tell me how she's in some wholesale marketing you know, situation.
So your dentist is in a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, yeah, basically. So, you know,
what
so
what kind of Ponzi scheme can a dentist, yeah, is it dental products?
No, well, this is, so she, it was for selling chia seeds. Some product.
Chia pet? Like the chia
pet? Well,
no,
like the seeds you put like in your oatmeal, you know. Like,
oh, that's
that.
Different. I was, yeah, thinking of the chia pet that grows. You know what I'm
glad
about.
It's not. I'm glad it's not, no, that. So, yeah, so she literally kind of with her hands was kind of describing this picture of, you know, well, there's people at the top and then they get more people to sell and then more people to sell. And I said, well, you should definitely watch this video and talk to Kathy because it really kind of sounds like you're in.
She described a Ponzi, yeah, scheme to a T. I mean, yeah. I don't know much about Ponzi schemes except that it starts up, right, here, and then there are legs, and there, yeah, are people working out of you.
Right.
I'm always amazed by professionals. I mean, presumably she makes a good living. What does she need to get involved in selling cheese?
Well, this is the thing that was interesting when I was doing the interview is that typically the way she described how people get into these things is that it's kind of they tap into something that you're interested in or you believe in. And that's literally what this woman was telling me, that she's been using this product. She believes in it. And so that they tap right into that part of you.
It's for weak people.
Yeah. And then it's like, and then you give up your money and now you are.
It's
in,
for
you know,
weak-minded people. I had a friend at a law firm who actually invited, him and his wife actually invited people over for a presentation on the acai berry. And it, I remember thinking, like, what do you make a good living. Why are you doing this? You're embarrassing yourself. And then he was sort of trying to pressure us into signing up to be his underlings. Because
right,
that's how it works, right?
Right?
I mean, it's like once you're in the chain, the people above you get more money. And I just remember the beginning of the video presentation. It was like, in the deepest recesses of the rainforest. I'm like,
right,
shut this off. I'm out,
right,
of here, man.
Right, right.
So your dentist would probably want to have you over for a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, I think so.
Seminar.
Recap. I told her she should buy this book. Maybe it'll help her, you know.
Yeah. How long have you been doing this, the Not-So-Legal Show?
Well, I would say last year is really when I really started pushing it and kind of really look, you know, doing weekly videos and get. I've been getting into Google Hangouts, which I want to do with you, so we'll talk about that.
Oh, I like Google Hangouts. Yeah. I've done a few for Huffington Post. They,
yeah.
That's how they do,
yeah,
it,
exactly,
actually.
Yeah, it's a good way to be able to get people. I interviewed a woman actually who's an attorney out of Dallas who focuses on bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And she had actually said that doing bankruptcy matters makes her heart sing, which I thought, as I'm
she
sure
said
you,
that?
You can appreciate as a lawyer, that's probably not what you or I would say.
No, but you know, that's who should be a lawyer.
Yeah, right.
Right? I mean,
right,
if bankruptcy, yeah, makes her heart sing.
Right.
And credit agreements make you swoon.
Right.
And that's your calling,
yeah,
in life.
You found it.
Wow. That's,
yeah.
What did you talk to her about?
Well, so her, you know,
I actually went on and I saw your, was this, let me guess to see if I got it right. That was the one where you taught people that bankruptcy is not a bad thing.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Because I think most of us, when you think of going bankrupt, that it's sort of, that's it. You're finished. And you
it was
know.
Never that good for any of my family members.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't, you know, so I think, but I do think this is kind of that situation where finding the right lawyer can really help you. And she said, you know, I have people come in, they bring all their receipts, they bring all of their stuff. And, you know, she really puts them on a plan and gets them on that right track. And I think anyone who has the ability to, you know, if you're going through something like that, that's kind of a tough thing.
Yeah.
And to kind of help you mentally and sort of, you know, she had a whole way of how she thought about it. And so I thought that was a good,
I think,
you know,
most,
thing to share.
I think any law student that doesn't get a job out of law school should file for bankruptcy. I mean,
right,
seriously,
right.
It's ridiculous.
Right.
Clean the slate, you know.
Yeah.
But student loans are not, you can't wipe them out in bankruptcy.
Right.
I think there was a student recently that won a case, so it could start.
Oh,
a,
really?
Yeah, I think this just happened a couple weeks ago. So.
Okay.
I don't know. I think maybe I should file for bankruptcy.
Well, you can call Theta. She'll help
Theta?
You.
Theta?
And you,
Theta?
Yeah, and you can. It'll make her heart sing to help,
yeah,
you.
Yeah. Listen, it'll make my heart sing to not have huge debt anymore.
Yeah.
So who else have you interviewed that you thought was really interesting?
Yeah, I talked to Brian Cuban, which was great. He actually, I'm from Dallas, so Brian came to
Who's
my...
Brian Cuban?
It's Mark Cuban's brother.
Oh.
So he's a lawyer, and he focuses really a lot on hate speech.
Yeah.
And I had met him a while ago, and I was going to be in Dallas. And he came to my parents' house. My dad was operating the camera.
Wow. Are you from Texas?
I'm from Texas,
okay.
Yeah. And so I sort of just, you know, said, great, do you want to come to my parents' house? So he came over, and he was great. And he's got a book that he wrote about men that have body image issues, and he's suffered from...
You're talking to one.
Oh, you should check out his book, you know, but
yeah.
Really, you know, and that was kind of what I was interested in talking to him about, just because I think... you know, whatever I can do to sort of, it's about healthy lifestyle stuff as well, you know,
yeah,
a little bit. And he had suffered from substance abuse and addiction and everything, and is coming out with this book about for men that suffer with these problems, because usually it's women.
I never had any problems, but then my girlfriend calls me a pig all the time, so,
so now it's starting.
Now I have
to...
tremendous body image issues. Yeah, she goes, "You're disgusting. Yeah. Put your clothes back on." So that's cool. So he doesn't rep Mark, and he doesn't do, like,
well, he's, representing, Mark has a foundation. And I know he does some work with that, and, you know, but his big focus really is kind of around, you know, hate speech and those types of issues. And so I was asking him about, you know, I don't know if you watched The Bachelor or maybe your girlfriend.
I got her into it. I used to blog for a site called Crushable, which is a girl's. I love making fun of everybody on The Bachelor. That's one of my favorite.
There was that case where the two African Americans that sued, right? And so I was just talking to him about that, and, you know, and his thing was like, I think they do age discrimination, you know, because he wasn't on the show. But, you know, so we talked about issues.
Did he represent those women?
No. I was just kind of getting his opinion sort of on some of these cases and whether he thought, you know, that now we're more censored than ever. And he said, you know, now literally someone says the wrong thing and... Oh, this is the example he gave. So he was the Mavericks were playing the Denver Nuggets, and he called them the Denver Thuggets. Uh-huh. And, like, social media blew up. He was a racist. He was saying all these things. He's like, I just was talking smack. Yeah. I mean, that's what you do. And now these days, it's like if it bothers anybody, you have now.
Even on, like, on Twitter, you know, you can send a tweet, and you're gonna be sued. I wonder. Right. Yeah, I wonder if anybody has successfully prosecuted a hate crime. You know, like a Twitter kind of.
Right.
You know.
Right. Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know. I don't really know that area of the law. So that's cool.
Yeah.
Anybody else that really stuck out?
Well, my other focus is actually on entrepreneurs as well.
Yeah.
So I kind of divide it between lawyers, you know, for sort of the advice side of things. And then also entrepreneurs, because I think, you know, now you've got shows like Shark Tank.
My favorite show.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that...
Dun, 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 dun,
yeah,
dun,
you've
dun,
got the music. I think that it's good for people to hear... Just about people that are growing their businesses, people that have had legal challenges and things that have happened, because, you know, I think everyone, we live in a society where you can start a business out of your bedroom and make it a multi-million dollar business, you know?
Yeah, we've turned comedians in law into $1,000 business.
Yes, you have. So.
From nothing into $100 business.
Exactly. So there you go. That's why I got to get you on the show, so everyone can hear about all the hundreds of dollars that you're making.
Yeah, no, you've had entrepreneurs on to tell their stories?
Yeah. So one of the... this is a great story. So there's a woman named Daisy Jing who's a beauty blogger, and you should check her out. It's like she got to work on the YouTube channel link name, but it's Dazer something. I'll send it to you so people can check it out. But her focus is really about empowering young women through beauty and that kind of thing. And she has a company called YourPerfectBeauty.com that I'm going to start, you know, being a mentor to. And we're talking about doing some, you know, groups with women and kind of helping them with, you know, career advice and things of that nature. But she really has kind of started it from the beginning. And her story was that she had really bad skin problems growing up and was always trying to find products that could help with that. And so she's, you know, launched her YouTube channel, and she gets advertisers and products sent to her. And as someone who, when I interviewed her, actually, because I'm obsessed with makeup products, you know, and just because I think it's fun. And she went through some of my makeup, you know, and so that was kind of funny to have her do that. But she's great, so you should, you know,
check
out her site.
There's nothing I hate more than a girl who could be attractive but has bad skin. So I'm just... To me, that's really the worst, because you're like, oh, you could fix this. We have to fix this. We have to. We must fix this. So I'm glad that she's empowering women.
She is.
Is she empowering them to fix their skin? Is that what
you could say, in your honor, I will say yes, that's what she's doing.
But also then the flip side of me is like, wait, if we're empowering women, doesn't that mean, who are we empowering them against? Men?
Yeah, well.
I'm a little confused. Yeah. I like in theory, I like the idea of empowering women, but then I think, wait, so does that mean I have less power? How does that work?
Right.
Where do they get the power from? Is it a zero-sum game? That's really cool. I like that. And so what is your plan with this site? Do you want to just keep doing it, or do you want to expand it into something bigger?
Yeah, I mean, I've been talking to a couple of folks that have, you know, there's sort of interest around, you know, in the daytime scenario, sort of the daytime talk show format, which is great. And just talking to other sites about partnering and doing, you know, branded content around it. And so, you know, and just continuing to interview people and be able to, I have a guy coming up next who works with Dancing with the Stars. So I'm going to be talking to him about some entertainment stuff. So you know,
I don't like that one as much as Shark Tank.
Oh, you don't. That's not your that's not your thing. You don't like to do the tango.
No, I do. I tried it like 10 years ago. I took like a dance class. I wasn't that great at it, but the thing that I like about Shark Tank, I think it's amazing. You see all these awesome, you know, entrepreneurs from all over the country, and it's something you can watch with your significant other and be like, oh, we can do that, mm-hmm. or, you know, we could do this, or it sort of spurs your own creativity. Whereas with the dance one, I guess if you have a kid, I could see you know, it's a good family thing. But when me and my girlfriend watch it, I'm not like, I don't have that, oh, we could do that thing, right. you know? Like right. when I see somebody diving off a high diving board, right. I'm not like, oh, I want to do that, right. or, right. you know. I mean, I do think the dancing is cool.
Yeah.
I'll watch it, you know, for like a, you know, a few moments at a time, but I'm not like, I don't know. You know, it's all the same. It all eventually, it seems like the same to me. Whereas Shark Tank, it's like every new entrepreneur has, right. has a new story.
Right. Well, and I'm sure from your perspective, it's also, you know, you're having your background in law when they take some of these deals.
Yeah,
you know,
well, I love that.
You know,
I love
and
that.
So, and seeing kind of whether it's a good one or not.
Right,
is
you get to play Monday morning quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, you idiot. Yeah. 10%?
Right, right.
10, you're giving up 51%. Actually, my girlfriend and I do a funny thing now where we're in the apartment and I'll be like, baby, can you help me? I can't find my shoes. She goes, you know, you didn't come to me with a good plan. You really just came with an idea. And for that reason, that reason alone, I'm out.
Right, right, exactly.
We Shark Tank each other.
Yeah.
I see also on your site that you're very active in the LA County Bar and the Women's Bar, and you've got some sort of workout stuff going on. Tell me about the workout thing that you're doing.
Yeah, well, I am a big believer of healthy lifestyle stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that a
she
lot
She came
of...
here, by the way, in her yoga gear, just to prove.
Yes.
I get it. We get it. You're in good shape. You work out. You don't have to rub it in.
Yeah, it worked out with the scheduling, so I was appreciative of that. But I think a lot of people make themselves crazy over working out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's about balance and not being a crazy person about working out. And so there's a trainer at Equinox who really believes kind of in that same thing, that, you know, you don't need to sort of spend hours in of your day focused on like, what, I can only eat this, I can only have that, I have to work out, you know, that's sort of just this crazy making mind stuff. And so, you know, we've just been playing around with different ideas on how to, you know, create programs for women that sort of, you know, focus in on the balance side as opposed to being sort of more obsessive about
it. I actually think lawyers need a lot of help in that regard.
Yeah.
I think they work these crazy hours and then that completely gets sidetracked. You know, they don't have any way to balance it into their, like, integrate working out in their lives. Like, my brother's an attorney, hasn't worked out in like 5 years.
Right.
Like,
right.
literally hasn't exercised in 5 years. And I see people at law firms all the time doing that. I just started working out. I've been working out for 3 weeks now.
Wonderful.
And
how's that going?
It's going well.
It's going good. Okay.
Yeah, I feel like how do people lose weight working out though? I feel like I don't know how to do that. I'm working out and I feel like I'm getting stronger, but I'm not getting skinnier.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's a balance of you know, your eating lifestyle and working out, but my bigger sort of commitment to it is to just make life about balance and not you know, sort of a lot of people beat themselves up, I think, in this type of process where it's like, well, I'm not skinny enough, or I ate the cake, that's so horrible. And you kind of create these cycles.
Yeah, I always make myself throw up after I eat cake.
See? You can stop that,
terrible.
Right? Yeah.
I feel terrible.
Exactly.
But so you're still working in the law?
Yes. I'm at a digital media company.
Yeah.
Do you
envision yourself staying in the law and sort of this, does it, you know, do you want to always stay in the law or do you want to, you know, move towards these entertainment ventures or how do you see that?
I mean, I think I love the law because it's challenging. Certainly with what I'm doing with the Not So Legal show, I see as my next sort of big venture. And with the experience I've had so far practicing and everything else, it's that right combination, you know, and I can let other lawyers do the drafting and I can just talk.
Yeah,
to
let
them.
Other lawyers, right?
Exactly.
You got to let them do the drafting is really the part that we all hate.
Right.
Like, the thinking,
the thinking.
That
really.
Actually isn't horrible.
Right.
It's just the actual sitting in front of a document and just being like, okay, that comma needs to be moved.
Right. And how to sort of take a normal sentence and make it sound really complicated, you know.
Do you find, so you're from Texas.
Yeah.
And you've lived just in LA or other?
Well, I went to undergrad at Florida, so I lived in Gainesville for a little bit, and then I've been in LA.
How would you compare sort of the legal professionals that you've met in all those places?
And that's a very interesting question. I think I've always been in entertainment.
Yeah.
So, you know, I interviewed a guy actually in Dallas who works with, you know, growth capital, like helping companies go through growth capital and doing sort of, you know, corporate prenups and things of that nature. And I, even when I met him, I'm like, you're like the real kind of lawyer, you know, I mean, this is like a serious buttoned up guy, you know, in LA, you know, especially in entertainment. I mean, you go to a meeting, it's like, we're all wearing like whatever, you know,
I don't even think anyone owns an actual suit.
Right. You know? So I think for me, you know, in my practice, I mean, I started in, I've always been in entertainment, but there for a little bit, I worked in civil litigation where I actually had to go to court and sort of do that whole thing. And now it just seems, you know, most of the lawyers I know in LA are sort of the relaxed kind. And when I've talked to people in Dallas, it's sort of the more official, serious type.
Yeah, see, I always think, you know, because I started at a couple of big corporate firms in New York. I always think, you know, maybe I wouldn't have hated it so much if I had started in LA. Just because of the general attitude about, I just feel like, just the idea of like feeling like you have to be so buttoned up. Not that like what you wear necessarily defines what you do, but it sort of does in the law. I feel like you definitely see just a more laid back attitude about, you know, work life balance here too.
Right.
You know, I think in LA law firm, like they get it. You have to go surfing in the morning. You come in when you're done surfing.
Right. You know? Yeah, no, for sure. And I think, you know, when I was in law school, there was this woman that would always sit in front of me, and she had like her notepad and like her little snacks on the side, and she would take these notes, and she was so into it.
Yes.
You know? And so those people that are now also lawyers, where, you know, I work with a lot of outside counsel on things, and they really love the law. I mean, they're super into it, you know? So I think, I mean, for both of us, you know, it's about finding, like, I don't hate the law. I like it. And so it's about how do you sort of like a lot of people that I mentor that are law students, you know, it's sort of about, you know, if you want to go the corporate route, like I'm not the one to talk to about that. But if you want to take your law degree and do something with it and still use it, you know, that's kind of what I'm a big proponent
of. I find people respect
it
a ton in entertainment when I come into meetings.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're a lawyer. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Right. Right.
You're not an idiot.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So what, before we let you off the hook here, is there something you'd like to promote, or, you know, we'll give you the floor?
Sure.
Well, did we tell them the website?
Yeah, so it's just thenotsolegalshow.com. And I pretty much post videos every either Thursday or Friday. You'll catch Matt on the show because I'm going to interview you next.
That's great. I'm excited. What are we going to talk about?
Well, we'll have to talk about that. We can't tell everyone.
Okay.
Details,
well, yes. Yeah, so check that out. I mean, I'm going to be on it, so obviously I'd love to promote that. And thanks for coming over in your casual
Thank you for letting me do that.
Okay.